You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Earlier this summer, we embarked on a project to take a wide-ranging look at Vermont's energy future and what it will take to meet some of the state's renewable energy goals as we progress towards using renewable energy sources to meet 90% of the state's energy needs by the year 2050. We conducted interviews with several people involved in that effort and hope to begin presenting their views to you shortly. Between the recently released United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, which warned that limiting global warming to close to 1.5 degrees Celsius or even 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels will be beyond reach in the next two decades without immediate, rapid, and large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, the series of wildfires out west, and other intense storms such as Hurricane Ida, concerns about climate change have grown considerably over the past 12 months. But how will we address these? And what is Vermont's and Bennington County's share in that effort? The experts we interviewed have some important insights to share. Some of the conversations were long enough and detailed enough to make them worth hearing in full, not just in edited clips. One of those is with Thomas Hand, a local resident who is a co-founder of MHG Solar of Manchester, a company in the business of developing solar fuels and renewable energy. This discussion has been lightly edited for length and clarity, but was one worth hearing beyond what you will also have a chance to hear when we partner Mr. Hand with a few of our other interviewees in a shorter segment.
Yeah, so Vermont's using 500 million gallons of fossil fuels a year. So really the obvious ways to replace that is electric vehicles and heat pumps to provide heating. You know, there are some other things that you can do, but if you're thinking, you know, on a large scale, how do you replace fossil fuel burning cars and oil furnaces and propane furnace boilers, it's going to be heat pumps for heating primarily and electric vehicles. And both of those obviously use electricity as their fuel.
So you had suggested or would mention that in the article that you sent me that One thing you thought might be a good thing to implement here would be electrification rates. I wonder if you could explain a little bit about what's involved with that.
Sure. Yeah, so it's an idea. I didn't come up with it, but I think it's an interesting idea. Department of Public Service, Vermont Department of Public Service has suggested it as well. So the idea is pretty straightforward. Vermont's burning 500 million gallons of fuel. We need to replace that with other fuels. And really, if we're going to go to electric cars and, you know, electrically driven heat pumps, we need electricity. So we need to have, we need approximately twice as much electricity to power electric cars and heat pumps as we currently use. So thinking about how you do that, well, we already have an electric grid that for the vast majority of the year has plenty of excess capacity. So if you take Manchester as an example, the substation and the wires and the electric grid in Manchester, the vast majority of the year, 99% of the year, has plenty of excess capacity. So the idea of an electrification rate is to say, well, we already have this distribution network and we are covering the full cost of that distribution network with our current electric consumption. If we double our electric consumption, which is what we need to do if we're going to replace fossil fuels with electricity, then we should be able to run that grid at a much lower cost per kilowatt hour. So what you could do is you could really go about this two ways. You could say, let's make all electric rates cheaper. But what I'm suggesting is that additional electricity that is needed, why don't we provide that and not force those new loads, electric cars, heat pumps, to cover the cost of a grid that already exists? Why don't we just pass through the cost of that power that's using a grid that's already been paid for and not double charge in effect? So electric rates, you know, on average in Vermont are kind of 16 to 18 cents per kilowatt hour. The wholesale rate for most of the year in Vermont is about 4 cents. So there's a pretty big spread there. Most of the cost of our power is really in the grid. If we use the existing grid that we've already paid for to deliver twice as much power, those additional incremental kilowatt hours for the electric cars and the heat pumps could be at a significantly lower rate, and that would help spur adoption of those technologies and help move us off of fossil fuels faster. So that's the idea of an electrification rate. It says, look, we already have a grid, we've already paid for it, we want to push twice as much power through it, that's our end goal. Let's allow those kilowatt hours that are going to go to electric cars and heat pumps to come through at a much lower cost. And it's not because somebody else is going to pay for that cost, it's just because it's a much more efficient way to do it. We can provide those additional kilowatt hours at a very low cost, and there's no reason we shouldn't pass that through to those new electricity consuming devices.
Okay. Well, let's pivot to the whole solar question. I mean, I guess what in your experience or your opinion do you think or do you see are the main impediments to developing more solar fields in Vermont? You know, like the one that you were trying to put together there in Richfield Road. I mean, is it the permitting process? I've heard that frequently said in the past that the permitting process is just ponderous, it's slow, it's unpredictable. You can spend months, if not years, going through all those steps, and then at the very last moment, so the last agency decides, no, we're not going to do this. Or is it more like the sort of, not in my backyard mentality that we see from place to place? Or is it both things, and maybe more?
It's both and more. I would say, at a fundamental level, before we talk about solar permitting, you have to talk about what we're trying to do, right? So, we're not installing solar panels because we think they look good. We're doing it because we're trying to generate additional clean electricity, renewable energy, right? So, if you put the deployment of solar in the context of its purpose, which is to generate additional renewable energy, you got to ask yourself, well, how much do we need? So, you know, the simple, and we talked about this the other day, but the simple math is that if we are going to eliminate the fossil fuels that we're using in our cars and our buildings and our industry in Vermont and replace it with electricity, we need twice as much electricity. So there's a couple different ways you could go about that. You could just say, we're going to throw up our hands and we're going to let other people solve it, which is means, you know, you just try to buy it from Hydro-Québec or you try to buy it from New York or Massachusetts or New Hampshire. But I think that that's probably unlikely to be a very smart way to do it, because those places are also trying to get off of fossil fuels and they also need to double the amount of electricity they use. So if Vermont says, hey, we'll just let somebody else do it for us, well, that means New York or Massachusetts or New Hampshire or Quebec or Canada, they got to produce what they need to get off of fossil fuels, and then they also have to do it for us. If they're going to do that for us, we're going to have to pay them a premium, and we're not going to get any of the property tax that goes along with it. We're not going to get any of the jobs. There's a whole host of reasons that we should want to do renewables, at least a significant portion in Vermont. So if you just kind of do back of the envelope math, what you come up with, and I won't run through it all right now, but we talked about this the other day, you need about 40 times as much solar power in Manchester as the project that I was proposing there to meet the energy need of electric vehicles and heat pumps. And you can debate, you know, maybe it'll take 10, 15 years or however long to get that, those electric vehicles, you know, on the road and those heat pumps installed. But the reality is we know where it's going. We know what we need to do. And it's a question of how fast we can do it. So in the context of Manchester needing 40 times more solar than that project I'm proposing, is, you know, put another way, 2.5% of what is needed. So in the context of a process that takes a year and a half to 2 years to develop a project that is going to meet 2.5% of our goals, yeah, I think there's a problem. I think that we need, but I think really the problem is that there hasn't been much clarity at the state level as far as what the goals are. You know, everyone says we're going 100% renewables. What does that mean? How do you do it? And I think if there was a better understanding of what that entailed, and you know, it doesn't have to be all solar, and it won't be all solar. That's not the point. The point is that the energy has to come from somewhere. And so once you understand the context of how much is needed, you know, what the land acreage is required, I mean, you can do different things, right? You can do hydro, you could do nuclear if you wanted as an option. I don't think that's probably a very good one. We just turned off a nuclear power plant in Vermont. You could do wind, you could do solar. There are different options. So, you know, without going deep into the specifics of the permitting process, which I don't think is super productive at this point in time, I would say it's really a question of, do we want to solve this problem? And if we do, we need to acknowledge the magnitude of it. And then once you acknowledge the magnitude, I think you can then start to talk about what's the proper way to run a permitting process. And is it appropriate that it takes 2 years to develop a project that will meet 2.5% of a town's needs? So, maybe it is, but if that's true, then it's going to take 50 years to do this. And from a climate perspective, that's called failure. So I think there's a, you know, to put a fine point on it, the question is really, do we want to try to address climate change or not? Our current setup, if you kind of do the math, would lead you to believe that we don't actually want to address climate change, because we're not at the moment. We have the capacity to, but we haven't chosen to actually do it yet.
So
politically,
it sounds like what you're saying then is the state's goal of getting 90% of its energy from renewable sources by 2050 is a nice little soundbite, but it's not really, we're not on track for that at all.
No, we're not on track at all. No, that's ludicrous. But I would say, and I don't mean it's not possible. I just mean we're not doing it. And you know, I don't know. I'm sort of a firm believer that that we can plan for the future, but I don't think we can set a goal that's 30 years from now and say that we're going to hit it unless we set interim goals. And the way that Vermont has chosen to, I'll say, meet its requirements, you know, that it's set for itself, is really just by pretending that it's addressing the issue by buying cheap hydropower from Canada, right? So not to be really negative, because I do think that we absolutely can solve it, and we could choose to solve it, but so far there hasn't been a whole lot of progress.
So are there some incentives you think the state could offer folks like yourselves or other solar developers or wind developers to encourage more of that? And I guess conversely, this is a two-part question here, I apologize. Is there some way to give like the folks who live there on Richville Road across the street from the field? I mean, would it make sense, do you think, to say, well, in exchange for living being a property abutter to a solar field, we're going to give you a discount on your electricity?
I really don't think that is a very good, I don't want to say a bad idea, but you don't get a discount on coffee when you live next to a coffee shop, right? And you don't get a discount on cars when you live next to a car dealership. Like, I just don't really think that's how we've chosen to set up our society. Could the state do that? I mean, sure, right? That's a political discussion. I don't think it's a very productive way to go about it. I think that typically the way that decisions on siting have been made have been around zoning and planning, which, you know, the town of Manchester has zoning and, you know, planning department, and they put out rules and regulations, and, you know, the site that we picked for that project was based on those rules and regulations, right? So, you know, we were told to go to certain places, and so that's where we went. Obviously, you know, you have situations where abutters, whether you're talking about a solar project or any other type of development, housing, commercial, retail, I mean, people object to things and they have a right to do that. But I don't think that the solution is to say, you don't like what's going in next door, therefore we are going to, for lack of a better word, bribe you with some incentive. I think that society kind of breaks down if you view everything as everyone should get a handout because they're next door. That's my personal feeling. I mean, and that's a fairly specific issue. But to your broader question of incentives and should the state offer, you know, folks like me who are developing energy projects incentives, I really actually don't think so. I don't think the state should be offering us incentives. I think the state should be clear. I think the legislature should be clear about what we want as far as energy generation. Like, if it's a priority, if we want to hit particular climate goals, I think the state should be really clear on what it is we're trying to do. And so just to give a concrete example, you know, if we need to build, toss out a number, 4,000 megawatts of solar to provide the electricity that we need to displace fossil fuels, then we should set ourselves a time frame to do that. And we should say, we need 4,000 megawatts. Why don't we do 400 a year for 10 years and we can address the problem? That, I think, would be very concrete. And then I think if you wanted to make that happen and you were in the legislature, let's say, you would instruct, say, Agency of Natural Resources, like, thou shalt allow 400 megawatts worth of projects. And you could say, you know, we want to have the ones that have the least amount of environmental impact or aesthetic impact. You can set all your criteria, but you would make clear that the expectation is that amount of power being produced, or that amount of capacity being installed that would then generate the necessary power to meet the goals. Right now, and just to give you an example of something we face quite regularly, when we go to do a solar project, Agency of Natural Resources has jurisdiction. And so we are faced with a number of environmental rules and regulations that do not apply if you were, say, building a house. So if I needed to cut down, let's say, 2 acres of forest as part of a, let's say, a 20-acre project, that would be treated entirely differently by ANR than if you were cutting down those 2 acres for a house. Impact is the same on the environment, but the way it's treated from a regulatory perspective is entirely different. And so they would have the ability to block me from doing that as part of a project, but they don't have the regulatory authority to stop a homeowner from doing that. And so, and I'm just pointing this out as one example of, you know, there's regulatory discrepancy based on what you're doing, not based on the impact you're having. So if the state was serious about meeting its energy goals, I think you would want to, or if it wanted to be more serious and more aggressive, then it would probably make sense to address some of those discrepancies in the regulatory process.
Do you think there are enough locations in Bennington County? We'll just sort of drill down to the local level here create enough solar projects and that would create enough megawatts of energy to meet Bennington County's share of Vermont's renewable energy goals? Or I suppose that's kind of too narrow and provincial a way of looking at it. I suppose the idea would be that there's more open land or whatever, or good sites available, let's say in Essex County, just for argument's sake, that would offset. But just wondering around here between what's been identified as preferred sites, is there enough land? So
sites that have been identified as preferred sites, I don't have the math offhand, but it's not even remotely close to what is necessary. Okay. I mean, probably an order of magnitude, if not more, off from what is needed. Is there actually enough land and space to do it? Absolutely, yes. But those are very, very different things. And that's sort of the overarching point I'm making, which is that there is a lack of mathematical rigor when those plans are created that results in a much lower amount of preferred sites or designated sites being set aside or being approved.
Do you think rooftop solar has the potential for creating enough capacity for what we need to generate solar-wise over the next 30 years? Or is that another thing that sounds like a nice idea and it's part of the solution? Yeah, maybe, but not remotely close to being, you know, something that would replace, let's say, a project like you're trying to put together there on Richville.
So I'm just doing some kind of back of the envelope math here to try to ground it a little bit. Let's see, 20,000 kilowatts. People, so you need, I'm just kind of doing the math. So in Manchester, you would need, you know, like 15 to 20 panels per person. So could you do that on, you could do a very sizable chunk of it on rooftop. I think it's a cost question. So to answer your question directly, I don't think you can do all of it. I think you could do a really sizable amount of it, but it's going to cost twice as much probably.
Wow. Okay.
So when we do larger scale projects, which in the context of Vermont, that means like 2 to 3 megawatts, the price on that power is down around 9 cents or lower is, you know, those are competitive bids that the state runs each year. Net metering rates, you know, for rooftop right now are more like 18 cents. So it's about double. I think the rooftop versus ground is really a policy and a cost question. It's not really an engineering question.
And sort of my final question, I guess, I keep on hearing that the cost of solar power is coming down and, you know, it's decreased dramatically over the past 10 years or so. Cost of solar panels is less than it used to be, and we're converging, if we're not already, the lines haven't already crossed between solar and other types of renewables and versus fossil fuels. Is that accurate, or are we getting close to that point where the simple cost of it is going to make it economically attractive to people who want to, you know, who need power of some sort and are looking at it like, well, hey, I can get solar power for less than I'm paying my oil dealer?
The simple answer is in sunny parts of the country, solar is now the lowest cost or is vying with wind for the lowest cost. I mean, if you look at competitive procurements in sort of the southern half of the country, solar is cheaper than anything else. Sub 3 cents per kilowatt hour is kind of where you would have to be on a utility scale project in California, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Texas, probably even, you know, Oklahoma, some of the Midwestern states. So that's cheaper than just about anything else out there. Wind is, if you have a good location, is competitive in that range as well. But Vermont is not nearly as sunny as those places, right? And so, and you know, for that type of you know, 3 cents kilowatt hour, you're talking, you know, hundreds of acres of panels, and ground mounted, you know, so it's different, right? Like we right now in Vermont, we're sort of sub 9 cents for these, by industry standards, you would call quite small, 2 to 3 megawatts. If you were up in the, say, 20 to 30 megawatts, you'd probably be down in the 7.5 cents, something like that. But that difference between what you're seeing, you know, when I just said 3 cents in the desert southwest or in the west, and, you know, maybe the equivalent in Vermont, probably about as low as you could go right now, would be probably 6 cents. That's really the difference there is just how much sun Vermont gets and regulatory environment. You know, of that 9 cents, approximately a penny of that just goes straight back into property tax. So, you know, you can't do 3 cents a kilowatt hour and have a penny go back into property tax, right? So some of it's regulatory environment, but the vast, you know, the real big thing is just the amount of sun you get.
So here's my actual real last question. In general, overall, when you consider all these factors you've been talking about here, do you feel optimistic that solar and wind and renewables will indeed be made available in sufficient quantities in enough time? Or is the jury still very much out on that one?
Technologically speaking, there's really not any question. Like we already know how to do it. We're doing it. I mean, you see solar projects going in at lower costs than anything else on a grid in various sunny areas. I saw an example, Saudi Arabia did a couple hundred megawatt tender and the winning bid was below 2 cents. I mean, this is unbelievably cheap. So from a technological perspective, I guess I'm, if I had to categorize myself, I'd say I'm hopeful, but I don't think that's really accurate because it doesn't really matter whether I'm hopeful or not. It's already happening. So there's nothing really to hope about. It's already happened. So that's great, right? That's the position you want to be in, to have proven technologies that can help you meet the goals that you have. I think in Vermont, am I hopeful about getting where we need to be? I hope that we can do it as fast as is technologically possible. Right now, we're not going nearly as fast as we could. And so I hope that we go faster. Will we ultimately get there? I don't really have any question, because I think if you have the lowest cost technology, you're probably going to win the game given enough time. But really, the thing with climate is not about whether we get to, you know, stop burning fossil fuels to tap quickly. And so I absolutely believe we'll get there. I would really like to see us go a lot faster. I don't think we're going anywhere near fast enough to hit, say, the Paris goals of keeping temperature within a certain agreed upon range. So I'm very hopeful in many ways, but I don't think that we are on track from a Paris goals perspective.
Again, Thomas, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'd love to talk to you about this again some more sometime. And
thanks, all right.
Take all care. Right, take care.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.